Chapter 40 Dragon's Heart. Despite everything, it required much coaxing on my part before Reynold would consent to anchoring off the Heartstrings base. And even though the man had obvious misgivings over nearing that terrible structure, terrible to his mind, of course, his skill brought us no more than 30 meters away from the eastern side. The ocean's current pulled us about, given that the capstan was located toward the bow. The anchor caught against something down there, perhaps the Heartstring itself, and pulled. Then the bow dipped hard, and the whole ship turned leftwise as salt water surged over the bulwark and slicked the deck. We ended up facing into Erda's spin, waters rushing by, dragging at our little vessel, threatening to carry it onward to distant shores if only our anchor should fail. We three stood together at the bowstem, Wyland, myself, and our captain. Reynold refused to look at the throne or the Heartstring that supported it. He put his back to these and would see nothing other than his ship, his crew, or the black waters of the ocean. His arms were crossed over his chest, fingers of his right hand idly fidgeting among his many charms. "I recognize that rook skull," I smiled. He glanced at me, surprised, I think, then let his gaze wander again. "Yes, father handed his down to me, and his to him. One day perhaps me to mine. And adding your own bits and bobs to it before you do, eh?" He nodded. "Sweat brings the deep power." The sun blistered down, baking the waters upon the raked deck and dazzling my eyes in the glinting vibrancy of the metallic spar. It stood high before me, devouring all attention. Soon I would go there. I thought of the man I once was, of the deep religious fear he'd experienced at passing a structure that, to his way of thinking, could have only been erected by a god. I considered that his old suspicions were not too far off the mark. The entire world had been constructed by the gods, Erda, Talom, and all the rest of the diaspora. This place had been built through their will alone, realized by untold armies of drones acting as their hands, the humanoid and the monstrous. Then, when the resources dwindled, when the diaspora itself had finally been cored hollow, the drones themselves had been rendered down for material until all that remained were the Dvergas, the errant untethered, and the last handful of heavy movers. "You're a credit to your father's memory," I said, "as I'm sure your son will one day be to yours." "Haven't any, sir." I smiled at him. "And yet the chances are better than none that in the future you will." He seemed to take my words as a kind of blessing, swelling through the chest as though energized. I thought about this and supposed it might be so. Perhaps my words alone would now serve as a blessing to others, even if the only weight they carried was that which the listener had assigned. It was an idea that continues to disturb me to this moment. "I have something for you, Reynold," I said.
"Oh, sir, that's unnecessary."
"I know. Honest gifts always are." I produced a bundle wrapped in oiled cloth, about as large as 2 splayed hands held side by side. Unwrapping it carefully, I said, "For now, this will only be a curiosity." The combined gasps of Wyland and Reynold leaked away in the crisp air as sunlight glinted off polished brass. The captain himself looked on it reverently, as if it was a religious artifact.
"Looks somewhat like a sorcerer might use," he observed.
"No, only a sea captain," I said. "Its function is not far different from the scope you use to sight your heading. The principle, however, is entirely different. It's called a sextant. It's designed to work on a world turned inside out."
Reynold then looked fearfully to High Country, so I said, "Not Erda. There are others out there, beyond."
"Oh," he said, relieved. "Well, why give it to me, then?"
"You may need it, or your children. Keep it for me, please. Keep it safe.
None of you know how to use it, but if the need ever presents itself, the knowledge will be provided.
Reynold bowed deeply and thanked me. I then told him that there were things I must discuss with Wyland privately. He bowed again, nodded to my friend, and retreated to the galley ladder, clutching the instrument to his chest as though his soul was housed within its workings.
"Have you a set of wings under that cape?" Wyland asked. "Something you might gift to me to speed me home?"
"Are you in such a rush to be away?" I asked.
He shrugged. His eyes betrayed that sense of happiness which ached. A peaceful spirit, heart unbroken but cracking.
"Miss my wife, miss our rodents.
That's your children?"
"Yeah," he laughed.
"Well, no, Wyland, I cannot gift you the power of flight.
I'll be watching, though. You may have an adventure or three on the road. Dangerous out there some parts, don't I know it. But you're going to make it home."
He looked at me closely.
"That's something you can see?"
"No, it's something I can influence.
I'll reverse the direction of the Ruhr if that's what it takes to see you returned."
His face paled when I said this, and I laughed.
"Calm yourself, friend Wyland. It won't come to that." "Oh, thank the gods, then."
"Only one of them."
We watched the heartstrings bass a while, silently. It plowed through the ocean, leaving behind it a wake as wide as the king's flotilla, the troughs more than enough to cradle our meager ship.
"What happens now?" he asked. "Do you turn into a raven and fly into the throne?"
"You're obsessed with flying, do you know that?"
"Well, what then?"
"In a moment, you're going to see. I can feel it right now, waiting for me."
"What does it feel like?" he whispered.
"Like an arm you didn't know you had."
He looked down at his hands, flexed the fingers experimentally. Then he looked at the shining wall that surged upward before us to join the other side of the world.
"Big arm," he noted.
"I do have a gift for you. You won't think it's very impressive, but let me assure you, to be given this gift by a god is quite something. In fact, the gift I offer you is nothing at all. You'll take nothing from this to remember our encounter. No trinkets, potions, or magic powders. No special weapons, no suit of armor, no heirlooms for your children, no sacred hidden knowledge. I will not come to visit you later in your life or send you dreams. At no point will I ever ask for anything from you, your family, or your bloodline. From this day forward, the House of Wyland shall be free of godly meddling."
"My heart tells me this is a true gift," he nodded. "But I would turn it down if you let me."
"Would you?"
"Yes. I would put myself at your service, Udo. In a life packed full of scurry, service to a god would be a noble undertaking."
"Then, in service to a god, go home, Wyland. Hold your wife, kiss your children, have grandchildren. Teach them things like dignity, honesty, love. Do you know what your kind is, my very good friend? You're magnifiers. You absorb the events of your world, synthesize them, consolidate them, and send the same energy back into the world amplified tenfold. Thus does evil spread like cancer. Good, though, may also be spread in like fashion. You must choose what you'll magnify, Wyland. All of you. The cycle must be broken so that you learn to be ignorant of hatred, unneedful of punishments or justice. Can you imagine such a world? Can you even fathom what such a world might be like?"
"Barely," he said. "Maybe several lifetimes from now. I suspect a whole lot of forgiveness would have to be spread around first."
"That is true. In some cases, that forgiveness won't even be warranted. But see if you can find it anyway. I want you to think about this now. Two children, young enough that they're not yet speaking, are placed together in a room. What happens? In most cases, I believe they'd play together, assuming they've not been mistreated.
They become friends? A good chance, he half shrugged. Just so, I agreed. What of two grown men? Could you say the same? Perhaps not. Why?
He began to list any number of reasons. They were all the same things I'd heard before. In every case, they were reducible to differences. Differences of appearance, differences of belief, of background, or station. His voice trailed off halfway through. I think he must have realized the reasons were not very good. I said, somewhere along the way we learn to hate each other. If that is a learned behavior, it can be unlearned. It's very easy to hate someone whose experiences differ from yours. Easy to hate the man with different beliefs or ideas. In some cases, that hatred may even be well-placed. It doesn't matter. Your magnifiers always remember. What you choose to project will be picked up by others, amplified further. And so it goes. Soon enough, your world is filled to overflowing. Fill it wisely, friend Wyland. Hatred brings no prosperity. It brings lust for vengeance. Ultimately, it bathes your world in blood.
Wyland cleared his throat, but said nothing. I believe if he'd agreed with me, I would have despaired of him having heard. As it was, his silence heartened me. Wisdom lives where silence walks. It's time, I said. Very well.
I searched within myself for the nerve endings that were new, the undiscovered appendages. Deep within my hull, I found the bridge leading back to myself, serpentine and articulate as a counselor's tongue. I lifted and it hove above the roiling waters, segmented, flexing, reaching out to the ship like Erda's own tongue. It had a mirror shine, as though each piece had been polished and buffed with jeweler's rouge. Water drained frothing from the surface, leaving behind tangles of kelp and enormous fish that flopped and gasped in the day's light. I shivered the arm to send them back to the waters. There were many gasps when I did this. I noticed them in a detached fashion. I felt half outside myself when I manipulated the ship. Neither Udo nor Erda, but a disembodied spirit floating between these two identities, looking down on the Recht and the people she held. From my vantage, I saw several of her crew fall to the deck in supplication, heads bowed and hands lifted high. They must have feared I would allow the ship and her crew to be swallowed in my ocean. An instant later, I was Udo again. I turned from the heartstring to address the crew. Most of them were still on their knees, if not frozen in terror on their bench. I recalled the feelings I'd once had in that place and tried to imagine what they must be thinking and was ashamed. I should have warned them. I walked among the sweeps slowly, hands wide to demonstrate there was no malice. Stand, please, I said. Several of them did, but a few lingered. I went to these individually, took them by their hands, and helped them to rise. I don't require this of anyone. I'll never ask you to kneel. Come, stand with me. Look at this world with me. The last man to rise was older. His hair was white and sparse, while his limbs, though still strong, had gone ropey with age. He wept openly when he looked at me, even through eyes gone cloudy with cataracts. I wiped his cheeks with the cuff of my sleeve and said, "What's all this now?"
"Dunno, sir. Dunno what's come over me."
"Be at ease. It's an honest reaction. Tell me your name."
"Arnest, sir."
I nodded. "You are blessed, Arnest." Then I looked to the rest of the crew and the ship's captain. "All of you. You've brought me to this place in safety, and you all are blessed." Even as I said these words, I knew uncertainty. I saw in each eye a deep sense of spiritual ecstasy and wondered what I was doing to these people, harm or good. It was too late. I'd said the thing and no taking it back.
For the moment, I cast the concern from my mind and looked south to Walhaz and the distant mountain beyond. Look at our world, I commanded. Look how beautiful she is. And she was, I realized. Vast cavern painted in hues of green and gold, reds, purples, browns. Birds flying the impossible distance between high country and low, piercing the clouds. Ships in the ocean bathed in golden healing light. I was tempted to cast out and see it all, but refused myself. I wanted to see it as much as I could, with human eyes. Like a painting, one of the crew muttered. I smiled at him and said yes. Then I returned to stand by Wyland. This is goodbye, my friend. You can no longer follow me.
I know,
he said. His voice was unsteady.
I think I'll pray to you, if that's all right.
I nodded. Try to do so when there's a raven about. They are often my ears and eyes. He swallowed wetly.
It's all real,
he whispered. Take heart. It was also real before this revelation. The world has not changed. Only you have. Remember the things I've told you.
My word on it.
We embraced. If there had been air inside of me, he would have crushed it from my lungs. Then I released him, smiled at him, nodded, and stepped over the bulwark and onto my bridge. The outer shell of the heartstring was smooth at the waterline, to discourage climbing, most likely. It was cold where I put my hands upon it, though within I could feel the thrum of the field generators. I examined the surface closely until I found the keyhole, no more than a pinprick pierced through the skin at shoulder height. I could hardly see it, but when I rubbed my fingertip across, I felt the blemish. It was something woodworkers often said. The hands see those imperfections the eyes miss. Holding my hand over the hole, I quested out with the liquid silver tool Irpisha had given me, plunged within, and expanded into the nooks and crannies. Then I solidified the tool, pushed and turned. A section of the wall melted away, leaving a dark doorway behind.
Udo!
It was Wyland. He stood at the bow, holding the stem loosely to steady himself against the tug of the ocean current.
What is it?
I called.
There's something I need to ask you. Only I'm afraid.
I nodded, but said nothing. I'd already decided I would wait there as long as he needed me. There was no need to rush him.
You've seen where we go?
He shouted.
After we die?
Yes.
What waits for us? Is it hell or the chaos beyond, as the priests have said?
I wanted to tell him his priests were fools, but I did not. He might have gone around spreading the word to others and gotten himself into serious trouble. Likewise, I wanted to tell him that not even the gods knew what happened to the human spirit after the shell was vacated. I would not. Such would have frightened him beyond all reason. I raised my voice to defeat the waves.
Your experience will differ depending on where you are in life. The aged are often tired and ready to go when their moment comes. The young, less so. They know there is much more to be done. If you know your moment is coming, you'll be afraid when you recognize it is upon you. And you'll know, Wyland. When it comes truly, you will know it and perhaps be terrified. Try to remember that your fear comes only from the newness of the experience. Like birth, there is no way to prepare your heart for it. You'll think there is, but there isn't. But it is a quick thing, and after the terror of the unknown melts away, you will know a peace so warm and so profound that were you to be returned to life, you'd be dragged kicking and screaming.
I saw something close to relief in his eyes, and was relieved myself. Every interaction between God and human seemed to me a test levied upon both the God and the human. He waved, and I waved back. Then I stepped through the door into darkness.